Bolivia. You fund these organizations that basically raise the alarm that the country is heading toward dictatorship, and it manipulates the press. I mean, in Bolivia, the reason why that coup didn't take hold is because Evo Morales kicked out AID.
And you also have, for example, Peter Kornbluh of the National Security Archive saying among the most infamous examples of USAID funding was the Office of Public Safety, a USAID police training program in the Southern Cone that also trained torturers. We only have 20 seconds. It's not your total focus, but your thoughts on how it's been used.
I mean, I don't have doubt that it's been used that way. I have no evidence of that. It's certainly in the conversation in South Africa, for example. People would make those accusations and be frustrated about that. But I'm more interested in the way that this kind of agency shuts down South Africa's ability to solve its own problems. And
I think
doesn't
that
support
is key,
that
and we're
going
to link to the articles you write. Professor Catherine Mathers at Duke University, thank you so much. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website, at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
You're listening to KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 4 Special Programming Campaign. Check out all the great special programs we're bringing you now through April 15th at kboo.fm/ATNF4.
Hey, it's me, Lisa Loving. Before we get into this episode, I want to take a minute to talk with you about investing in this radio station. It's the spring membership drive, and you can join us as a member by making a contribution to support this programming. We need your financial support to hold space for the locally produced news, public affairs, and music that links our communities together. This show, Keeping It Real, only brings on community organizers. And if you've been listening, you already know. This is it. This is the time. It's due something o'clock, and you, your family, everyone you love, deserves to be connected to a resource that's warm and supportive of diversity, equity, and inclusion, a safe space for immigrants of all kinds, and with a microphone you yourself can pick up and be heard. You can make a contribution to support programming like this at kboo.fm/give, or text KBOO to this number, 44321. I personally believe KBOO is the reason why former U.S. President George H.W. Bush called Portland Little Beirut, because even as far back as the 1990s and before, our volunteer reporters and public affairs producers, all trained for free then and now, covered our region's activist community like a blanket, informing listeners about events, resources, actions, and the best music to do it all to. As many as 15,000 people marched in the No Blood for Oil protest, against the first Gulf War in 1991. I think that's because they heard about it here on KBOO. That could be you right now, by the way. You could be trained in news gathering. You could be the one holding the microphone. This radio station has always been a welcoming center of knowledge, culture, and grassroots community. If you have resources and you're looking for a proactive, constructive place to invest them for a better world, this is KBOO's Spring Membership Drive. You can make a contribution at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Or on the app, you can tap the red button at the top that says donate. Or you can send us a contribution in a physical envelope to KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thank you for your support, and you might also consider getting involved with KBOO as a volunteer. Send an email to volunteer@kboo.org. This is Keeping It Real, and I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Yvonne Garcia, the Deputy Director of the ACLU of Oregon. They just released Firewall for Freedom, ACLU of Oregon's strategic priorities. Very exciting. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yvonne, I always assume that everybody who's listening knows all of the things, but of course they don't. So this interview, I want to take a step back and spend a moment over the significance of the ACLU of Oregon, an historic organization in our state. As far as I know, in my 40 years of living here, when I think of the maybe 1,000 organizations I've ever heard of, the ACLU stands alone. It really does. For several reasons. It's like a gigantic tree that has lived through incredible time and space. Famous for defending the free speech rights of everyone on principle. And that's actually part of the reason why, in my experience, the ACLU might be considered to be the bedrock institution that underpins our entire civil rights community in this state. Because you go to bat for the left and for the right, which is a unique spot. And you know, in Oregon, sometimes we're so far to the left that we're coming back around on the right-hand side. This is your 70th year in Oregon, so congratulations and thank you.
Thank you.
ACLU's mission is take action together to protect and advance our civil liberties and civil rights for a more just, equitable, and caring democracy in Oregon. So I want to talk about your strategic priorities, but before we go there, a really important legal case settled just a few weeks ago, actually, that I bet a lot of people miss because the announcement was made on the day of President Trump's inauguration, and a lot of people were probably in shock. I'm just putting that out. So can you share the facts of that case with our listeners?
Yes, of course. Thank you so much for this opportunity to have this conversation with you. So to start, yes, during the 2020 racial justice protest, peaceful protesters here in Portland were beaten, shot, and abducted by federal law enforcement who were sent here by the Trump administration. So we filed multiple lawsuits against the federal government on behalf of protesters, as well as groups including journalists and legal observers, whose constitutional rights were violated by the federal government's violent acts. The case that you mentioned was settled. It was one of many, and we were very proud to have represented the courageous clients in this case.
Can you talk a little bit about how many people, ACLU defended a lot of people that were involved in those cases. What makes this case important, aside from the fact that it's happening now? Can you just talk a little bit about who the defendants were, just a little bit?
Of course. And this case is important for many reasons. I think the filing of the case, as well as this settlement, is important because we all know it's a fight to hold the federal government or governments accountable. This case and the clients of this case definitely deserve the just and fair compensation from the settlement. Another lawsuit I want to flag for listeners to watch out for is the Index Newspapers case that was filed on behalf of the journalists and legal observers who were documenting the 2020 protests. And they were targeted and attacked by Portland police. We're expecting Portland City Council to approve a settlement in this case in the next week or so. So that's something for listeners to be keeping an eye out for. So both of these cases and the many others that were filed play a part in, one, disrupting and slowing down some of the excessive responses that we did see. Also, we want to be very clear, whether you are a federal police or local police, the ACLU is ready to hold the police accountable, no matter what administration they operate under. And again, the right to protest is fundamental to our democracy. We have the right to protest, and we will defend that right.
It really does fascinate me, especially right now, that this case settled on the day that Donald Trump and, I guess, Elon Musk were inaugurated. I mean, and this is a gigantic issue, but a few years ago, we had the Black Lives Matter protests, and now we have billionaires taking over and systematically destroying the U.S. federal government. I want to take time to unpack your three-part policy approach. So if we can we start, if you could give us just an overview of the ACLU of Oregon's three strategic priorities for the current moment.
Absolutely. So we have identified our issue priority areas specific to ways in which we can, one, uplift humanity, resist fascism, and create opportunities for Oregonians to engage in this resistance with us during these wild times and during this Trump 2.0 administration. So the buckets of work include immigrant and refugee rights, our work to defend immigrant and refugee Oregonians' rights to live and thrive in the place that they call home. Our second bucket is personal autonomy, freedom, and equal rights. And this is our work to advance freedom, equal rights, and non-discrimination for all Oregonians, regardless of a person's sex, gender identity, and sexual orientation. Our other focus is defending against federal government aggression. So we're our work with lawmakers and other partner orgs to defend our state, local governments, and schools and organizations against the Trump administration's threats. We are, the ACLU, is uniquely positioned to face this moment with our deep bench of legal advocacy and organizing experts, as well as our presence nationwide and our issue area expertise.
All right. And if you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving, and this is also the beginning of our fantastic spring membership drive. We want listeners to understand that KBOO's content is unique. We are independent, and you can support this kind of programming at kboo.fm/give, or you can text KBOO to this number. 44321. I honestly don't know when all of our work has ever been more crucial. And I just have to break all of this and just say, what do you think is going on, you, Yvonne? Because you know things. You've got experiential knowledge.
So I think it's important to recognize the impact of what is happening, what we're observing, what we're seeing, and what we're feeling in this moment in time. I definitely understand, and we can see the fear, the anxieties, and also just having to deal with the unknown. So all of these responses are so real and valid. I think it is important to remind folks that during the hardest times, our best strategies are really to stay focused, to try to navigate through all the noise and the chaos, and really focus on where we can be really actively doing work that feels and has an impact and, again, helps support the vision that we all have, right, for more just and caring Oregon. So I understand all that comes with it. It is something that is carried with us who are working at the ACLU of Oregon and really working our muscles to ensure that we're staying focused and really trying to navigate all the chaos, which is their strategy. We know that it's their strategy. So really paying attention to what the facts are, how are we verifying information, and then taking action from there. I will also say, you know, we were in a position at the ACLU of Oregon to start this work last year. We've been working, we've been planning, we've been prepping for this moment. so that in this moment, we are here and we are at the ready. So we've been preparing.
I do want to take this minute to close this hoop and ask you to talk a little bit about who's on your staff and what do they do? I mean, a lot of us are out here thinking, is it all attorneys? What do you do and who's there with you? And is there any super cool people you want to shout out?
Well, we have such a great and dynamic staff at the ACIB of Oregon. Folks will probably be surprised to hear that of our 21 staff that we have doing this work in Oregon, only about a handful are lawyers or policy wonks. The rest of us, like myself, are everyday Oregonians who care deeply about our community and bring into this work lived experiences, knowledge, and expertise. We are made up of departments and individuals who are experts in their field of legal, advocacy, campaigns, communications, fundraising, and our administrative professionals who are all dedicated to this work. We do this work in coalition, never alone. It requires partnerships, it requires community, and it really requires intentionality and how to navigate and move and understand the ecosystems in which we operate. So I'm going to call out my amazing staff, the amazing staff at ACI of Oregon, who show up every day to do this work with focus and resolve.
All right. If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Yvonne Garcia, the Deputy Director of the ACLU of Oregon. They just released Firewall for Freedom, ACLU of Oregon's strategic priorities. We already heard Yvonne talk about the overview of it, and I'm going to start digging into some of these pieces. But why? I just have a couple other questions. What made you start working on this last year?
Just the anticipation. We felt the energy and the idea that what we've called Trump 2.0 could be the reality. We wanted to be prepared for the moment. I would say probably most of us were really caught off guard during the first Trump administration, and we just didn't want that to happen again. There was a lot that we learned. There was a lot that first go-round helped us focus and better understand how we could be prepared, how we could organize, mobilize, and develop strategies that were really critical for Oregonians here. So it was something that I will say was hard. It took a lot of energy to focus that much time, but I think it really proved to be critical work, and it has allowed us to enter and be a part of this moment with strategies and plans at the raid.
All right. We're talking about the ACLU of Oregon's Firewall for Freedom. Let's dig into the first thing on there, immigrant rights. What are you guys seeing on the ground on this issue in the state?
Well, first, we are seeing communities and organizations gather to work collectively in support of our immigrant refugee communities across the state. I think this is a good reminder for listeners that in 2018, Oregon voters overwhelmingly supported Oregon's sanctuary law to protect against unlawful racial profiling, interrogation, and detaining of Oregonians simply because they may have been perceived to be undocumented immigrants. So we've held on to those values here in Oregon. And part of this work, as I mentioned earlier, we do not and cannot do this work alone. We are part of the Oregon for All Coalition with many other organizations, so that we can gather to be responsive to the threats to our immigrant and refugee communities. This coalition is finding ways to be responsive, to mobilize, organize our communities, and identify strategies and tactics. We've also seen a need and a demand immediate for Know Your Rights information. And so there's many organizations along with us who are getting this Know Your Rights education out into the communities. Also, we're working with legislators to protect families, workers, and communities through the immigrant justice package. We're in the middle of a legislative session now. And the immigrant justice package is a set of bills that will support immigrant and refugee communities with access to basic rights that will help families stay together. So these are the ways and what we're seeing happening in response to threats to the immigrant and refugee communities here in Oregon.
So just a few questions about that. When you said people who are perceived to be immigrants, what I'm hearing about is ICE, Immigration, Customs, Enforcement officers showing up in places and just arresting everybody or locking them all down and then letting somebody else figure out if they're citizens or not. Can you just talk a little bit about what happens in those kind of situations? Who gets caught up? Who in the past has been caught up in this kind of dragnet?
Well, I think that it's important that this is why the sanctuary law and why we really advocate for protecting of our sanctuary law, because people will make assumptions based on someone's appearance, the color of their skin, and will tell the story to themselves about this individual. So people with brown skin or who are people of color who speak a different language, they may automatically be perceived to be immigrants and be a target. And just targeting our communities where people of color and our immigrant and refugee communities gather to live their lives, to go to school, to do their grocery shopping. An important part of this work, as you mentioned, with ICE coming in and threatening and trying to talk to folks and trample on constitutional rights, it's important that this work also includes what we call verification. Again, as we mentioned, chaos, and there's a lot of noise and fear. So in order to be able to take steps that are meaningful and impactful, we need to verify information. So part of this work and this learning with this coalition and Know Your Rights is verification. So there's some organizations out there who are training volunteers to be verifiers so that they can observe, name, and identify what the situation is in order for an appropriate intervention or documentation of that happening. So it requires many, many voices, eyes, ears, and communities doing observation together.
When you say verify, do you mean verifying that people have the proper papers? Define that. I'm a little unclear about it.
Yeah, thank you for that. Verifying that ICE or law enforcement are engaging in unlawful stopping or interrogation of folks. So verifying that those acts are happening.
I just want to continue on this one for a minute because I know so many people and so many people in my social media who want to be allies of people who might be affected by this. And so a lot of people are super vigilant. Mm. Is there a best way for everyday people to be able to track this information so that we can help disseminate it? Or how should that work? I know a lot of people want to help because they're jumping into doing it, and I'm not always sure if it's helpful. But what do you think?
Yes, of course. And again, this work does require everybody to be involved, allies, people in the community. So we welcome people's desire to get involved. I would say that a place to start could be our website, aclu-or.org. As well as I mentioned, we are part of the Oregon for All Coalition. And this coalition includes so many organizations who are doing this work and doing different parts of this work. So there is really an opportunity for folks to go directly to that OregonForAll.com website to see all the partner organizations, volunteer, and to sign up to get alerts so that they can stay on top of what's happening and where support and volunteerism is needed.
And we'll talk about this a little bit later in the hour, but the stuff about sanctuary city, sanctuary state, has the stuff about specifically Portland, but the whole state of Oregon that puts us right in President Donald Trump's, he hates us, man. He hates us. He knows who we are. He's such the vortex on people that were protesting the border tactical squad. Like, he threw every piece. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm just saying, Sanctuary City is one of the things that President Donald Trump hates the most about us. I'm just going to say us. So I guess moving on a little bit, the second focus of your strategic priorities, personal autonomy, freedom, and equal rights. Can we list the things that come under that category? There's a lot of stuff in that category.
Absolutely. So this work focuses on advancing freedom, equal rights, and non-discrimination for all Oregonians, regardless of a person's sex, gender, gender identity, and sexual orientation. And we're doing this work through the Equal Rights for All campaign, which this campaign, Equal Rights for All, is to affirm abortion and reproductive health rights, gender identity and related healthcare rights, and sexual orientation and same gender marriage rights in our Oregon's constitution. So I want to be clear about this is not creating new rights. This is just to affirm and to specify in our Oregon constitution these rights and the individuals who have these rights. And it's important to get it into our Oregon constitution and to strengthen the walls that we have to protect the rights of Oregonians here. And the approach we are taking to ensure that how we describe leave no one behind. We're not going to just advance one arm of reproductive rights or same gender marriage. We want to name everybody and all the rights that folks are entitled to so that no one gets left behind in this work.
The right not to have a baby or the right to have seven babies if you want to.
Absolutely.
Or the right to have a non-binary gender identity or to be a straight cisgendered person, all of that.
Absolutely. The right to live and love and to take care of our health and our bodies in the way that is right for ourselves at the individual level.
Yvonne, I don't know if you can engage with this thought or if you can answer this, but the complete and total onslaught from the Trump administration against people's gender identities, the whole onslaught against diversity, equity, and inclusion, it just feels like a baseball bat. Can you just talk about what impact could his policy, I don't even know if that's the word, his executive order demonizing or outlawing diversity, equity, and inclusion, what impact could that possibly have on us? I know that might sound like an ignorant question, but I don't even get it. What's going on?
It's a very fair question, Lisa. I think that really what we're seeing is the ability to instill fear in the way we work, the way we live, the way we navigate life. I think these executive orders and this type of language is really trying to strip away protections that maybe employers give, that our health environments, hospitals, healthcare centers, really just to instill fear in organizations or governments or anybody, individual or at an organizational level, to fear continuing to do the work that centers marginalized communities, that centers on nurturing and validating diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging work. It's part of the chaos. It is part of the mountain of things they want us to fear. And I think also just create unsteadiness. So what we really want to do, what our goal and aim through education, through inviting folks to take action, is to feel a little bit more grounded in what we are dealing with and where we can be putting our attention and our strategies. There's a lot of nonsense and chaos being thrown around for very specific reasons, and it is impactful so we definitely want to validate what those experiences and feelings are, and let's really focus on the action items that we can take action and that are really rooted in something that takes hold. Right now, there's so much nonsense going on. I think it's just part of their strategy and even just the way they communicate. We'll take action. We'll be able to move forward when we see things that are really in a position to have an impact on our laws. And right now, we're seeing how much fear is impacting the work and the people who do this work.
And to follow up on that, so we just talked about gender identity, relationships, belonging. I want to also talk a little bit about birth control, abortion rights, the right to have a family and be supported. To me, that's all in the same bucket.
Yes.
And I could have sworn that Oregon actually had a very long tradition of women's clinics and feminist support of reproductive rights, reproductive control, where what, you know, a person who can have a child has control of their body. But can you just talk a little bit about how did that, I feel like in Oregon, that's loosening somehow, even though everybody does have the right to control their reproductive health, if you've got the money and if you've got the health insurance. I'm just going to put that out too.
Access.
Can you talk a little, can you talk a little bit about what is it like now in Oregon overall? And I mean, I guess I'm talking about Portland, the biggest city, but what's affecting, and I don't even want to say women's right to choose. I want to say the right of people who have babies to choose. Oh. My child is non-binary. And I just, you know, I'm so glad that you guys are putting that one on the map. But talk a little bit about birth and the right to reproductive control. Like, what is it like now and what could we lose?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it is, it's really an important reminder for our Oregonians to know that we do have some of the strongest rights for reproductive care in this state. Like, that have been, to your point, Lisa, yes, work that has been a long time in this state, and we have been able to advance reproductive health care and access rights here in this state. And those are, at this moment, still intact. Where we might be seeing some impact would be in terms of continuing to increase or have access for these services in other parts of Oregon. You mentioned Portland, and so we can talk about the limited access that rural Oregonians might have to this and our ability to ensure that there is increased access. So we do have those rights, like, on the books. They are in practice. And what we are seeing is, with the fall of Roe and through Dobbs, that through the federal government, as they try to reinforce at their level, stripping away these rights, having these rights named clearly in our Constitution will help set us up for the fight that we need to have. And so, to your point, yes, reproductive care, we do want to really be clear that it includes birth control, IVF, any type of strategies and tools that people need to determine how they want to have and or grow a family. So we want to ensure that all of those things are being covered and ensure that our Oregon Constitution is very clear who has access to these rights, and that no one should be discriminated from reproductive access and healthcare decisions based on their identities.
If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real, and I'm Lisa Loving. Our guest today is Yvonne Garcia, the Deputy Director of the ACLU of Oregon. They just released Firewall for Freedom, ACLU of Oregon's strategic priorities. I love that. It's the firewall. It's the firewall, man. And also, this is KBOO Community Radio's incredible, fantastic spring membership drive. You can make a contribution to support programming like this. Have you heard a lot of deep interviews with Yvonne Garcia in the past 6 months? I just want to put this out. KBOO, we're real people, we're volunteers, but we care more than, I'm just going to also say, we care more than Fox News does about you. All right? You being anyone who's listening right now, you can make a contribution to support programming like this at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. You know, and I really do hope that more people become members of KBOO and support this programming, because Yvonne, sometimes I wonder, it's like people aren't getting the information. We take it for granted that there's an ocean of information out here, but it's hard to find the information you need sometimes because, like you said, there's so much noise. And there is another pillar of the Firewall for Freedom, but I want to stop here for a second and ask you, ACLU of Oregon puts out a lot of information, training. Can you just talk about that a little bit? What's on your website, and how can people interact with it? Do you have events?
Absolutely. So yes, to your point, information, accurate information is critical, especially as we're dealing with so much bad misinformation specifically used to manipulate folks and cause fear. So it is important that as part of our work, we are sending out information or ways for folks to listen and better understand what is happening and what we can do about it. So on our website, we have the opportunity to share information about our work in the course and community so folks stay on top of what our work looks like, where they can get involved. If folks come to our website at aclu-or.org, they will find opportunities to support our work by volunteering, to support us through our work, and to connect with our coalition partners. As I mentioned, our Oregon coalition, and as well as the other coalitions that we are part of, these are access points for folks to find the communities, community organizations that are part of their communities or within their areas, so that they can get connected and understand what that work looks like as well. We found opportunities for folks to engage with action alerts. Get engaged, contact your representatives and lawmakers. We also have opportunities for folks to sign up to learn how to engage in our Equal Rights for All campaign, which this campaign, we are actively working to get over 200,000 signatures so that we can get this on the ballot in November 2026. So these are some of the opportunities that we have. Our website will continually be updated with updates on cases, on new work ahead, and how we're navigating these systems and this work with our partners. And there's always opportunities for your listeners and for our supporters to engage. And also stay on top of just reading maybe an ACLU email to understand what is happening. We can sign up for emails and action alerts as well.
And I'm going to ring that bell again at the end of this hour, because I think that's really crucial information. How can people engage? Because I spend so much time on social media, which is a blessing and a curse. And I see so many people just literally crying out to the wilderness, like, why isn't anybody doing anything? I know because of the work that I do that there are people doing incredible and impactful things all around, but we don't always hear about them. And, especially that sense of just somebody yesterday was arguing in one of my streams about, you know, the left doesn't know how to cooperate. The left doesn't know how to collaborate. You know, why aren't people working together? And it comes down to information, Yvonne. People don't know who's right. Working with who. And that's really important. So shifting gears a little right now, I'm going to go to the third pillar of Firewall for Freedom, defending against federal government aggression. I'm an old woman now, and I can remember the first time I was beaten by the Portland police with my best friend. And we were dressed like
Barbara Bush, right? We were part of the coalition of 100 Barbaras.
And this was in, I believe it was in 1990, because it was the first Gulf War, and we were protesting against the first President Bush, who it turned out was a really weird creeper. And so when it comes to federal government aggression in the city of Portland, Oregon, and the state of Oregon, but it was George Bush Sr. who named Portland Little Beirut.
That's right.
And I mean, there's always waves of people in this town who are ready to go out in the street. And Yvonne, not every city's like this. They're not. All right. And so they're really, I know people who have been beaten by police in this town over all of the decades. And, you know, we take it seriously. We sort of joke about it. But there's something about Portland that always stands out for stuff like that. So I know there's people who are listening, even maybe young people, who don't know what happened during the 100 nights of protest in 2020 and the ACLU's role. And can you tell us the story, Yvonne? Tell us the story.
Yes, of course. And it is. It's really important context and part of that history for Portland. So as I mentioned earlier, when we started the show, during the protests of 2020, the Trump administration sent federal Border Patrol agents, as well as other law enforcement, to storm Portland in an operation dubbed Diligent Valor. Try to say that without rolling your eyes. This was military-style violence against everyday people, as you said, everyday people who were exercising their right to protest. People were shot by pepper balls, other impact munitions, and the city was bombarded with tear gas, which studies have shown have long-lasting impacts on community health. So this is why we sued and why we continue to sue and why we file many cases in response to these violent acts. And as we started the show off talking about one of those cases that have settled and another that we hope will be settled soon. Really, the response and what we saw, what happened to peaceful protesters during that time, and the extreme response from the Trump administration really just created just a lot of fear and uncertainty. We want to remind folks that no one should be afraid to express dissent, to advocate for change, or to support causes they believe in. Some of these cases do take years, as we're talking about settling now and when we filed in 2020. But I think it's a good reminder for all of us. Justice does take time, but it's worth it in the end. So as we see and have these experiences, we learn from them, we understand what our strategies and tactics are, and we continue to push back and fight in all the ways that we are able. But it was really a mix of scary and inspiring visuals that came out of that time of protest in 2020.
Many people came out in 2020, and I bet that right now, there's probably people thinking, where did everybody go? Why aren't we in the street right now? And I have a feeling that people will be going in the street. I want to ask you just for more specifics about the policy strategy about defending against federal government aggression. Is there more granular detail that you can give us about that?
Well, I think that, one, I want to touch on the point about protest and yes, you know, folks responding in a in different ways to what we're seeing and what we're experiencing. And I think it is important. I mentioned that what happened in 2020 was also an opportunity as we reflect, like, what did we learn? And now what do we better understand about our visibility? And as you pointed out, Trump's targeted attacks to us. So I think that being aware of, should people gather in protest again? That is also probably is just what they are waiting for to send troops to us. So I think it's important, like all of these things are part of the consideration and we should really consider our safety. And we are finding different ways and strategies to do this work together. Protests will always be part of folks lifting up their voices and expressing their dissent or their support, supporting the causes that are most impactful to them. And it requires us to work with our legislators, work with our local government. It also requires us to hold our own local government and Portland police accountable as well, so that they are not inviting or creating access for the Trump administration to come into our state and again violate constitutional rights. We are mindful and paying attention to the threat of Trump sending troops again to our city with, again, violence acts. And of course, the chaos, as we've talked throughout this conversation, the chaos that comes with these messages, with the Proud Boys, with all of the negative and the attacks and the threats and the bullying that we're seeing at all levels of our community and where people are existing and trying to work, survive, shop. So this part of our strategy is really to work with closely, develop and deepen our relationships with our partner organizations, with our law enforcement. We're currently in the legislative session, so monitoring, supporting bills that help our cause and opposing bills that don't. This work is being developed, so we invite folks to engage, observe, and to track the work of our partner organizations to see how through collective work, we can strengthen ourselves and our rights and the borders of Oregon from Trump threats.
I need to shake some of the thoughts out of my head right now. so many things about the civil, the public unrest in 2020. So much tear gas and even outdated tear gas, chemical weapons, yes. Bear mace. So many chemicals were sprayed by law enforcement against the protesters that it caused some people to stop having menstrual periods. There was one, I'm going to say, I think it was a transgendered PhD student in biology, I can't remember what, actually did a crowdsourcing project during those demonstrations where she just asked people, pick up the munitions and bring them to me.
Oh.
And she was able to analyze exactly what was shot at the protesters. And that effort was incredible. And then I want to say several years after that, the Guardian newspaper had a special section about, it was like a multimedia section about what science learned about chemical weapons because of what happened in Portland, Oregon. Like those chemicals, they burned leaves off trees. They got into the watershed, you know, and like you said, what is the long-term implication of that? Which is fascinating. I mean, that was so historic. And here we are in the middle of it. And the other piece that I will always remember is how many people in city government start saying that downtown is hollowed out because of the protesters. The downtown was hollowed out from COVID and it was already hollowed out. So in the, even now, it's still not well. The city of downtown Portland, Oregon, for most of the years I lived here, rolled up the sidewalks at night. It was never really a hop and jump in place. I wish more people could remember that. That's part of what makes me feel so old. But the most important thing, though, at the end of the day that I want to say about this, everybody's protest grandma over here, is that almost every case over all of the years that is brought against a protester by the city of Portland or the feds or whatever, almost every single case fails. I mean, am I imagining that?
Well, you know, I can't really speak to the number of the cases that have failed or have gone on. I think that we can really look at the most recent case that we've seen that we started the show off, as well as what we expect to see and hope to see in the next week from our Portland City Council on that case that I mentioned. So it's a long, hard fight, and it does take lots of strategies, really lots of folks in identifying how to talk about the impacts and the violence. And the justice system is complicated and it's impacted by lots of different things, from just the way the system exists in of itself, as well as who's appointed judges in some of these cases and the decision-making powers there. So for us, we see it as critical as identifying these opportunities to continue what we call impact litigation. We do litigation that identifies clients that help us lift up a bigger issue, an issue that impacts communities, multiple folks. So these cases are really important in holding and creating accountability. And this is what we need to focus on. And movement and advancement and accountability is worth the fight. That's what we need to continue to do. So as I mentioned, there's lots of cases. They take a really long time. There's things that we can be doing in the meantime, but this is part of the process and it will continue to be part of our strategy.
If you just tuned in, this is Keeping It Real. I'm Lisa Loving. You can make a contribution to support programming like this at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Our guest today is Yvonne Garcia. She's the deputy director of the ACLU of Oregon. They just released Firewall for Freedom, ACLU of Oregon's strategic priorities. You know, Yvonne, like every nonprofit comes out with a three-year plan, right? This one just feels different to me. It's not exactly a three-year plan, but I mean, a lot of nonprofits, like they have to have
like priorities and stuff,
but this is just different. Like this just feels so real.
Yes, in lots of ways. And I think this is like our being responsive to the threats. I think that we are all just holding the heaviness of this moment as we continue to navigate and find ways to push back in all the different areas that we've named. And as I mentioned, we really worked hard to be ready for this moment, and we put in the time and the energy and research and working with our partners and our national ACLU to position us to be at the ready to know how to engage and engage quickly and who to gather and to ensure that we're inviting multiple folks in, organizations and communities to be part of this work, because we have to be responsive. Like, we're working our responsive muscles to really scary threats and what feels really impactful. So I think we're all feeling the urgency. And through this urgency, we are still trying to find ways to be intentional so that we can come out the other side with some important and critical wins, which includes bringing folks along in these fights with us.
Bringing folks along. Just what does that mean?
That means we want Oregonians to be engaged. We want Oregonians to fight along with us, to find the pathways that speak most to them in how to be part of this effort to push back or to fight or, you know, to be part of this firewall that we've called it. And as you mentioned, you know, in Oregon, we have a history. We saw it in 2020. We've seen it throughout the years. I remember, early in the Bush years, the protests and being outspoken. And so we have that muscle here and we have that response. And so we'd really like to see this collective energy come together to protect our most marginalized communities and individuals here in Oregon, because it will take all of us to create the Oregon that we want that feels more just and caring to everyone. So this is an invitation to volunteer, to learn more, to sign up, to get petitions, and even to read maybe a newsletter, you know, once a quarter to understand what's happening and to fight through some of the noise. Because I know it's a lot of information. And as you said, there's information coming to us from all different sorts. So we hope that people find the resources that they feel that they can trust. And we want to be part of that.
Let's stay with this for a minute. I know that you're part of the coalition, but for people that are listening right now and they feel frustrated because they feel like, who are the people and what are they doing? Can we be specific and name some of those organizations that you're collaborating with? Just so people know and people can say, oh yeah, they're with the ACLU, they're cool.
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, the Oregon for All Coalition, which houses so many partner organizations, but just to lift up a few, PACOON, Oregon Food Bank, APANO, some of our labor unions are all part of this work. Our Equal Rights for All campaign, we are working closely with our partners, Basic Rights Oregon, Latino Network, and we're continually and actively growing this coalition. So there are partner organizations all around us supporting this work in lots of different ways. And it's just really great to be in coalition and partnership with these organizations who are doing this work at different levels and in different ways. So that really strengthens all of our approaches when they come together. I'll call out Next Up, doing great work with youth and developing leadership and justice work. And just the long list is always on these coalition websites. So please go and see and identify these organizations that are part of your communities or are doing work that you're familiar with that you want to get more deeply engaged.
So in other words, if you're listening right now and you've been asking yourself, where are my people?
Yes.
Where are my people? You could go to the ACLU's website or what is it? What is the coalition?
Oregon for All.
Oregon for All. .com. And then you can see where perhaps your
That's
people
a big
are.
List.
It is a big list. And I mean, I'm going to say it again. The thing that I think is most surprising about my town and my state is that there's good people doing good things everywhere, but we don't always hear about it. Absolutely. But you can guarantee, I guarantee you right here, right now, if somebody comes up with an idea, somebody should do this, there's somebody doing it. So now shifting the frame, we're starting to run out of show. Yvonne, tell us one more time, take a couple minutes. How can people connect with the ACLU of Oregon?
Yes, thank you so much. We invite your listeners to support our work in many different ways. So we are in the middle of a long legislative session. So during our legislative session, folks can sign up to receive action alerts where we will lift up call outs and invite folks to simply follow some forms that we have developed to communicate with lawmakers and representatives to support legislation that are important or to push back on bad legislation. So people can sign up at our website for action alerts. We also invite folks to submit letters to the editor. Have your voices be heard and read and consumed by many others to be influential and to use your persuasion to support this work. We've got some trainings and opportunities on how to learn how to submit letters to the editor on our website as well. Also, big invitation for folks to sign up to support our Equal Rights for All campaign. Folks can visit our website as well as the EqualRightsOregon.com website, where you can immediately sign up to get trained on how to be a volunteer, the different volunteer opportunities we have. And again, I mentioned we are working to get signatures to get this on the ballot in November 26th. So please sign up and learn how you could be part of this work. And also an invitation for folks, again, to go to the OregonForAll.com website to learn how to get connected to our partner organizations who are doing legal observing work. So folks can also come to our website. Also, our members is what makes it possible for the ACLU to fight for democracy here in Oregon. And we invite those listening to become a member or renew membership or simply to support our work with a donation. Again, I can't say it enough. We are in this together and we can do this work and reach the outcomes we're striving for if we work collectively and as a shared aligned community.
So this is my last question. Again, you've got a lot of experiential knowledge. I talk a lot about Portland because it's where I've lived for so long, but you guys serve the whole state.
Yeah.
Is there something about the state of Oregon that you wish more urban dwellers understood?
Oh, that is a very interesting question, Lisa. I think that, yes, I think people have talked about the Portland bubble and this bubble in which many of us live, me included. I am a Portlander, been in Portland for 20 years, who really like see and feel the energy of this work. It is really important to know that there is important, great work happening in all parts of our state, in rural Oregon. We've got organizations like Rural Organizing Project doing amazing things in Southern Oregon and with our rural communities. So we really need to be ensuring that we're resourcing Oregon as a whole, not just Portland. So we should be paying attention and learning about what that work looks like. The unique challenges that rural Oregonians may have. We mentioned, Lisa, when we're talking about reproductive care and access. Access is different in lots of ways. So there's lots of great work happening across the state with great organizations leading this work, and we should all be paying attention and resourcing them.
That's it for our show. I want to thank Yvonne Garcia for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a great honor being part of this conversation with you.
Thanks. She is the Deputy Director of the ACLU of Oregon. You can find out more about their work and connect with them online at aclu-or.org. Special thanks to the entire KBOO Community Radio staff for making this all possible. KBOO Community Radio needs more volunteers, including on-air and broadcast board operations. Get involved by emailing volunteer@kboo.org. You can make a contribution to support programming like this at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Calling all lovers of physical media. Join us at the KBOO station on Friday, March 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. for our monthly First